could be the roving camera if you got one. You want me to rove? You got to decide how to rove. Then it was better. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Adam Serr. I'm chair of the State Historical Resources Commission. I would like to convene this Q1 meeting for 2020. Today's meeting of the State Historical Resources Commission has been duly noticed, and all of the agenda items are subject to action by the commission. Now I'd like you to join me in standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. I'd like everybody to know that in case of emergency, if we have to evacuate the room, we go straight back those through those doors and then out front where you came in, and then you muster there. I would now like for the commissioners to introduce themselves, and then we will have our executive secretary introduce herself and her staff. I'll begin with Commissioner Hoyos.
Good morning, Luis Hoyos. I cover architectural history.
Good morning, Brian Brandis, and I represent the public.
Morning, excuse me, Janet Hansen, and I represent history on the commission.
Good morning, Marshall McKay. I represent folklore.
Good morning, Lee Adams. I represent the public also.
Adam Sferro, I represent archaeology.
Alan Hess, I represent architecture.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Renee Villanueva. I'm a professor of archaeology at California State University, Los Angeles, and I represent Native American archaeology.
To my right is Julie Polanco, who is the State Historic Preservation Officer. I kind of introduced you for you. Sorry about that. And would you please introduce yourself and your staff?
I will. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. And good morning to all of you joining us on live stream. As Adam said, I have privilege and honor of being the State Historic Preservation Officer. To my right, we have John Saunders, our Deputy SHPO, Tara Lynch, our Chief Counsel, Legal Counsel. At the table, we have William Berg, Jay Correa, Amy Crane, and Twyla Willis-Hunter of our staff. In the audience, I see Diane Barkley, Katie Cotter, both that assist us, Diane, in our office, and Katie is also our legal staff that assists the team. So, thank you.
Thank you. We have no welcoming remarks from anyone today, so we're going to move straight to resolutions. The City of Santa Barbara, 68th Certified Local Government, we have a resolution for them. I do not believe that there's anybody here from the city to receive the resolution, so I am going to read it into the record, and then we will allow them to find another way to celebrate the resolution moving forward. So this is State Historical Resources Commission Resolution Number 2020-01, Resolution of Recognition, City of Santa Barbara. Whereas Congress declared in the National Historic Preservation Act that it shall be the policy of the federal government in partnership with the state and local governments to foster conditions under which our modern society and our prehistoric and historic resources can exist in productive harmony. And whereas the National Park Service and the State of California through the Office of Historic Preservation, California State Parks, has established the Certified Local Government Program to carry out this policy. And whereas the program recognizes local governments which have legislated a preservation program, including a Qualified Cultural Resources Commission, which identifies and designates significant cultural resources to be protected for future generations and which advises the local government on actions which affect these resources. And whereas on October 21st, 2019, the City of Santa Barbara was, with the recommendation of the Historic Preservation Officer, approved by the United States Department of the Interior to be a certified local government. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the State Historical Resources Commission and the State Historic Preservation Officer recognize that the Department of the Interior has invested with the City of Santa Barbara all the responsibilities and benefits of certification, and be it further resolved that this resolution be recorded in the minutes of the State Historical Resources Commission and a suitable copy presented to the City of Santa Barbara, dated January 31st, 2020, signed by myself and California SHPO Julie Polanco. So congratulations to the City of Santa Barbara, wherever you are. Yay. We'll now move on to agenda item number 6, which is the approval of the November 7th, 2019 summary of minutes. All commissioners have received a copy of the draft of the summary of the minutes from the last meeting. Please note that the summary and official minutes are the recording of the meetings, which are available through the Office of Historic Preservation website. Are there any comments from the commissioners regarding the summary, including any proposed additions, deletions, or other revisions? Is there a motion to approve the summary of the minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Tara, would you like to do a roll call vote, please?
Yes. Adams.
Aye.
Brandis.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hess.
Aye.
Hoyos.
Aye.
McKay.
Aye.
Vanalaweth.
Aye.
Shuro.
Aye.
Motion carries 8-0-0.
Next, we have commission and staff report. The chairperson's report. I'll go off the cuff here, and I just wanted to let everybody know that there's a lot of preparation that goes into putting this meeting together and a lot of work that happens throughout the year in preparation for this meeting. And I'd like to acknowledge not only the commissioners for the time that they take and the dedication that they have on their own time to review these nominations and work with the Office of Historic Preservation to prepare, but as well the staff from the Office of Historic Preservation for being so dedicated and working so hard to make this meeting seem as seamless as it can be. There is an enormous amount of work, again, that goes into all of the literature that we get, and there are questions and phone calls and a number of things that happen in order for us to make this work for the public as well as the process. And so I just want to let everybody know it's an amazing machine that is well oiled, and I appreciate everything that everybody does. I can pull it right before we start that. Okay. Next will be the Executive Secretary's report.
Good morning. Thank you for those kind words. I really appreciate it, and I know that staff does. In addition to the very hardworking staff that's always with us in this great team of the commission, we've had a lot of changeover and a high volume of difficult consultations in the last couple of years, and the staff back at the office also really do have taken on a lot and worked really well in a big sea change. And I think this totality of group is so thoughtful and hardworking, and I think they really do serve the public very well. So thanks for that acknowledgement. I also wanted to acknowledge the staff at the office. With that, we have lots of consultations, as usual, more agreement document requests that we're getting because of our federal partners' inability to be able to identify and evaluate properties in advance of projects. So we're working really hard on that. I think that the agreement documents really do stand for making sure that the projects will accommodate and protect the resources as the law requests. We have had we filled two archaeology positions that were vacant. We still have two historian positions that are open, and we're hoping to fill them within the year, but we're really grateful for the new staff to come and help Anne-Marie Meaden, our supervisor, with that. I attended a state parks leadership meeting a couple of weeks ago at Asilomar. The leadership gets together every year and discusses topics of mutual importance, and just it's a really good time to gather, meet with our partners, meet with this other folks that are in the district and kind of spread out around the state. And state parks is also continuing on their strategic plan. And so we'll hear a little bit about that as we go forward and be able to participate. But I think that the leadership is a really strong group of people who are doing some really amazing work in the space of our state parks, particularly with a focus to getting people outdoors who haven't traditionally recreated, and also creating space parks in urban settings. That duck was perfect. So I think that there's more exciting things to come, and stay tuned for that. I'm also happy to say that we'll be attending the Resources Agency directors meeting in April, and that's a really great opportunity to spend some time with our regulatory partners, looking at the topics of mutual interest and doing better by our public in doing so. Our Cultural Resources Climate Change Task Force has been busy working to try to complete our gap analysis, with an aim to have a public meeting sometime this spring. So we'll let you know about that, and I'm really looking forward to getting to a space where we can daylight to the public what we're thinking, where we're going, get everybody's input, and get started on doing some real projects. The science behind the projects is really important, and we're taking the time, I think, in the correct way to tackle a new topic. But I think what will be really the best part is when we can actually get going and put some things down and make some progress. And the only other thing I was going to report on is that I'll be in Washington, D.C. in March for the annual conference of state historic preservation officers. We have staff giving us information, so we can also have some separate meetings with agencies to better collaborate on consultations. And I invite all of you to send me anything or any people that you think I need to meet with while we're there. But it's a great opportunity to work with our federal partners, the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, the National Association of Tribal Preservation Officers, a very important partner to us, and just doing better in the work we do. Janon gave an update yesterday about training and emails, so you all have that. State Parks, and all of you have the State Parks emails now. And I think that concludes my report.
Thank you. We're now going to move to Consent Calendar 1. Before I begin reading the rules of Consent Calendar 1, I'd like to mention that there are three properties that will be pulled from Consent Calendar 1. Battery Osgood Farley, which was number 1, Point Furman Light Station, number 2, and number 6, Borough Flats. We're still working on revisions to those nominations, and they will be ready at a future time. So the commission will now hear nominations and any comments regarding the eligibility of the nominated properties for the National Register of Historic Places. Based on the evidence presented, including the nomination and any comments received regarding the nomination and the nominated properties, including testimony at this meeting, the commission will determine whether the property or properties meets the criteria of the applicable register program. For nominations to the National Register of Historic Places, the Commission will then make a recommendation to the State Historic Preservation Officer regarding forwarding the nomination to the Keeper of the National Register of Historic Places for action by the Keeper. The Commission only considers evidence relating specifically to the applicable register criteria and not any social or economic matters related to a nomination or a nominated property. All properties that are listed or determined eligible for listing in the National Register of Historic Places are automatically listed in the California Register of Historical Resources. Furthermore, all properties listed in the California Registered Historical Landmark Program, including and following landmark number 770, are automatically listed in the California Register of Historical Resources. The Commission will first hear those nominations that are on Consent Calendar 1 of the agenda. Such nominations are on the Consent Calendar because the Office of Historic Preservation is not aware of any opposition to the nominations. Information concerning the nominations on the Consent Calendar has been forwarded to each Commissioner prior to this meeting and is on file at the Office of Historic Preservation. Unless a member of the audience or a Commissioner requests that a nomination on the Consent Calendar be withdrawn from the Consent Calendar, the Commission will not hear testimony on the nominations and will vote on the Consent Calendar nominations in a single motion. If a nomination is withdrawn from the Consent Calendar, the Commission will hear testimony and consider such nomination later in the meeting. So right now, is there any member of the audience that requests a nomination be withdrawn from the Consent Calendar? Is there any Commissioner that requests a nomination be withdrawn from the Consent Calendar? Is there any commissioner that wishes to recuse himself or herself from hearing the consent calendar? The commission welcomes comments on the consent calendar items following approval. Any person wishing to address the commission on a consent calendar item but not wishing to remove it from consent calendar shall complete a speaker form and submit it to the chair prior to the commission acting on the consent calendar. Such person shall address the commission following action on the consent calendar. The Office of Historic Preservation staff will now present information about each of the properties on the consent calendar. So what we're doing now is just removing the slides or skipping through the slides for the properties who were removed from Consent Calendar 1. Let me know when you're ready.
Ready.
Okay, thank you.
The Eddie Anderson House, located in Los Angeles County, is a Colonial Revival two-story wood-framed residence in the South Los Angeles neighborhood, originally constructed in 1940. The main house has a rectangular plan with a two-story wing to the east and a one- to two-story wing to the west. The cross-gabled roof has an off-centered front-facing gable with composition shingles. The walls are primarily stucco-clad. The main entrance is located off-center to the west on the street facing elevation, with a porte cochere to the east. A porch with shed roof is located at the center of the rear elevation. The building's Colonial Revival architecture style is expressed primarily via typical features of the style, including most prominently the broken pediment and fluted pilasters with Doric capitals around the main entrance. The home was designed by engineer Gerald Manson and built by Harry W. Sweet as the principal residence of Edmund Anderson. The property is eligible under Criterion B in the area of Performing Arts and Ethnic Heritage Black for its association with the working life of Edmund Anderson, universally known as Eddie Anderson, and so the name of the nomination reflects this. An African-American performer best known for his portrayal of Rochester on The Jack Benny Show, initially a radio show and later a television program. Anderson began his career as a teenager on the vaudeville circuit. Born in Oakland in 1905 and growing up in San Francisco, he sold newspapers and developed his trademark raspy voice due to damaging his vocal cords while shouting to potential customers on San Francisco street corners. During the 1920s and 30s, he worked the vaudeville circuit, singing and dancing with various teams. While touring the East Coast, he briefly met comedian Jack Benny. In 1932, he made his first film appearance, having recently moved to Hollywood. In 1937, Anderson became the first African-American performer to have a regular role on a national radio program, playing the part of Rochester, Jack Benny's servant. With limited opportunities for upwards mobility, many black actors, including Anderson, calculated that playing a servant was better than being a servant. Despite its reinforcement of racial stereotypes, Anderson's role represented a transition from white actors playing characters of color in radio to a black actor playing a black role. As the role transitioned from radio to television, Benny and other show writers made a conscious effort to remove all stereotypical aspects from Rochester's character, and with the departure of Mary Livingston, Benny's wife, from the show as his primary foil, the importance of Rochester as Benny's primary verbal sparring partner increased until the end of the television show in 1965. Anderson also performed and starred in feature films from the 1930s through the early 1970s. The property meets the registration requirements for the residences of prominent persons outlined in the Historic Resources Associated with African Americans in Los Angeles Multiple Property Submission. In addition to being Anderson's primary residence from 1940 to 1977, the property also represents his role as a significant individual in the history of Los Angeles, as reflected by his title, Mayor of Central Avenue. This was an honorary title, but Anderson used it as a public soapbox in order to advocate for his community and the neighborhood. He also advocated for African-American participation in the Second World War, including support of and in-person appearances at the Tuskegee Airfield, where the Tuskegee Airmen were trained. The Grand House also reflected Anderson's success in the entertainment industry, but despite the odds, reflecting his status as the highest paid African-American actor in Hollywood at the time. After his death in 1977, Anderson received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame and was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame in 2001. While the period of significance ends in 1977, the property does not need to meet the requirements of Criteria Consideration G as a property whose significance was established over a long period of time, including a few years less than 50 years from the present date. The property is nominated by a consultant working on behalf of the property owner, Edmund R. Anderson, Jr., son of Eddie Anderson. No letters of support or objection have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine the Eddie Anderson House eligible for the National Register of Historic Places under Criterion B at the local level of significance with a period of significance of 1940 to 1977 and meeting the requirements of the Historic Resources Associated with African Americans in Los Angeles Multiple Property Submission. Staff recommends the State Historic Preservation Officer approve the nomination for forwarding to National Park Service for listing in the National Register of Historic Places. Shock Cottages is a small district consisting of two Queen Anne-style residential buildings located on adjacent parcels on High Street in Palo Alto. Built in 1897 by Theodore Schock as a speculative rental homes, the buildings are two-story wooden frame houses clad in V-groove siding and painted shingle, with front-facing gable roofs and projecting porches on front and rear. Each cottage is embellished with a spare amount of Queen Anne ornament, including lathe-turned post porch posts, raking cornices with pediment returns, fish scale shingled gables, and scroll sawn brackets. Surrounded by much larger commercial buildings constructed during the latter half of the 20th century, the Schock Cottages are the only intact 19th century pioneer era dwellings remaining in downtown Palo Alto. The property is eligible under Criterion A in the areas of exploration and settlement, and Criterion C in the area of architecture, with a period of significance of 1897, the year of construction, until 1935. Although Leland Stanford envisioned Palo Alto as an upscale community of professors and merchants serving Stanford University, the southern edge of the city's downtown evolved into Palo Alto's working-class enclave, where local service workers, tradespeople, and laborers could find inexpensive housing. The building's modest exteriors, designed by builder George W. Mosher, were quite different from high-style Queen Anne homes designed for the professional and managerial classes, but emulated them in reduced scale and proportion. The period of significance ends in 1935, when sections of both homes' parcels were transferred to the city of Palo Alto to build a mid-block alley, an event representing the transition of the area from a working-class neighborhood to an expansion of Palo Alto's commercial district, leaving the Jacques Cottages as the last survivors of the city's early working-class settlement. The property is nominated by a consultant working on behalf of the property owners. No letters of support or opposition have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine the Schock Cottages are eligible for the National Register of Historic Places under National Register Criteria A and C at the local level of significance, with a period of significance of 1897 to 1935. Staff recommends the State Historic Preservation Officer approve the nomination for forwarding to National Park Service for listing in the National Register. Hi. Pioneer Town Main Street Historic District is a grouping of 25 contributing buildings, structures, and objects built in the mid-20th century with a late 19th century Western vernacular theme located in San Bernardino County. The buildings are generally single-story with varied wood cladding and Western-themed detailing, including parapets, porches, and wood boardwalks. The buildings flank Main Street, M-A-N-E, an earthen pedestrian-only street on an east-west axis. All contributors were built between 1946 and 1996. With the exception of one reconstruction, all were made as Western-themed film sets. Unlike other sets at other movie ranches, the stage sets at Pioneerstown were intended to double as commercial buildings outside of filming hours, providing goods and services to Pioneertown's film productions as well as practical sets. The property includes 25 contributing and 15 non-contributing resources, but retains sufficient historic integrity for eligibility as a district. Important contributing buildings including Pioneer Liquor, Pioneer Bowl, Trigger Bill Shooting Gallery, the Pioneer Gazette, Barbershop and Beauty Corral, Marbles Electronics, Pioneer Town Nickelodeon, Pioneer Duds and Saddlery, Red Dog Saloon, and the OK Corral. The property is eligible under Criterion A in the areas of significance of art, film, and television production. The Pioneer Town Corporation was established in 1946, the year the construction began, as a filming location to serve the movie and television industry during an era when Western-themed shows and films were at the height of their popularity. Pioneer Town was the vision of noted Hollywood actor Dick Curtis, who appeared in over 250 television and movie titles. Curtis was acutely aware of the production costs relative to transport, setup, and construction of crews and sets for remote film locations. By combining a permanent Western-themed filming location and company town, Curtis provided a cost-effective alternative to custom-built sets and contracted services. Pioneer Town businesses provided craft service, props and costumes, beauty salons and barbers, recreational facilities, and even extras to populate crowd scenes. The majority of Main Street's buildings were completed by 1947, and the project completed construction in 1949 in an opening day ceremony featuring Roy Rogers rolling the first ball at Pioneer Bowl and hitting a strike with it. By the time of its opening, Pioneer Town Corporation was already turning a profit on the sale of nearby residential tracts. Despite early change challenges, including scarcity of well water and differences of vision between Curtis and his board of directors, resulting in Curtis' replacement by actor Russell Lucky Harden, feature-length films and television shows were produced at Pioneer Town for cowboy actors like Gene Autry and made the Pioneer business model successful. Hundreds of television shows and movies were filmed at Pioneer Town. The period of significance ends in 1966, the year of construction of the newest contributor, a replacement for an earlier Pioneer Town building that was destroyed in a fire. The property is nominated by a third party on behalf of several of the Pioneer Town property owners. No letters of support or objection have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine Pioneer Town Main Street Historic District eligible for the National Register of Historic Places under National Register Criteria A at the local level of significance, with a period of significance of 1946 to 1966. Staff recommends the State Historic Preservation Officer approve the nomination for forwarding to National Park Service for listing in the National Register of Historic Places.
The south-facing Grace Lewis Miller House was designed in the international style. The one-story, stucco and wood frame, 1,755-square-foot building of stepped rectangular volumes is sited in the north end of Palm Springs, an area subject to strong winds from the San Jacinto Mountains and the northwest. Originally a dwelling integrated with a professional studio for teaching a specialized technique of physical exercise known as the Menzendieck Method,
the compact building is L-shaped in massing. The northern side of the building is relatively solid and opaque, except for a large bank of fixed windows surmounted by clerestories, all of translucent factor-like glass, obscuring the studio's interior. By contrast, the southern elevation is open and porous to the outdoors, characterized by groupings of full-height transparent window walls flanked by a screened porch on the east end, and a long band of shorter, steel-framed fixed encasement windows on the west. The flat roof of rolled asphalt alternates between taller parapets and lower runs of aluminum-painted fascia with an attached gutter, rendered in characteristic crimped metal fascia. Occupying the center of an approximately half-acre lot, the property includes an attached rear guest suite constructed in 2006, according to Miller's wishes and Neutra's original 1938 plans, and a non-contributing pool installed after the period of significance. Other alterations were the conversion of the garage into a utility room and the later addition of a steel and wood carport, gate, and concrete block wall at the property's east edge facing the street. Two rectangles of grass hug the front and rear of the house. Beyond them, in sharp contrast, the landscaping features various species of trees and native or Mediterranean desert plantings distributed in decomposed granite. The property retains all aspects of integrity. The Grace Lewis Miller House is eligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places at the local level of significance under Criterion C in the area of architecture, representing the work of a master and possessing high artistic values. The period of significance is 1937, the year of construction. One of Richard Neutra's most celebrated and publicized projects, the property was an unlikely candidate for such a claim, a small Depression-era building located in the isolated northern end of a small city. While its boxy white volumes recall the Pueblo dwellings of the Southwest, it was that resemblance integrated with the severity of the European international style against a desert backdrop that ensured notoriety. The house studio is unusual in its rich repertoire of many of Neutra's signature strategies, and noteworthy because it exemplifies Neutra's typical consuming approach to his clients. Here, an especially interesting relationship, a design for a woman whose strong professional goals paralleled her architect's. Miller's objectives were therapeutic with regard to the body's physical fitness. Neutra sought to create therapeutic environments that responded to the body's senses and perception. The property is nominated by a consultant on behalf of the owner. The Agua Caliente Band of Cahuilla Indians Tribal Historic Preservation Office confirmed the property is off-reservation and not under the TIPO's jurisdiction. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine the Grace Lewis Miller House is eligible under National Register Criterion C at the local level of significance with a 1937 period of significance. Staff recommends the State Historic Preservation Officer approve the nomination for forwarding to the National Park Service for listing on the National Register. This concludes Consent Calendar 1.
Thank you. So what we do now is we will vote on all four properties at one time for Consent Calendar 1. We'll open it up for comment by the commissioners, and then we will open it up for comment by the public on any of the properties on Consent Calendar 1. So, is there a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve Consent Calendar 1.
Second that.
Great. We just give Tara some time to write it all down, and then she will ask for a roll call vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Brandis.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hess.
Aye.
Hoyos.
Aye.
McKay.
Aye.
Vilanowith.
Aye.
Zero.
Aye.
Motion carries 8-0-0.
Congratulations. Are there any commissioners who wish to speak to one or more of the properties just approved?
Chairman. Just a brief comment to welcome the Anderson House to the National Register and to commend the preparers and the family on their work. It's rare that we hear frankly, it's rare that we hear diverse nominations. I wish that we would hear more of them. And one that is useful because it sheds light on an important period of the entertainment industry in Los Angeles, and one that is memorable. I'm old enough to remember the Jack Benny Show, and I'll never forget Rochester.
Yes.
I just wanted to say, echo your comments, Commissioner Royals, and say that we spend a lot of time in our office talking about how we remove barriers to entry and sort of highlight the path to National Register nominations for properties of history that have yet to be daylighted and told. And we spend some time with multiple property document submissions to help with those nominations. And I was really pleased to see this property here, not only because of its significance of the life of an important figure, not just to the movie industry in Los Angeles, but I also think those projections to the world of changing perception and helping society move in the right direction are always so important. So I wanted just to acknowledge the use of that multiple property document submission as a tool, and we hope to encourage more of those going forward.
Any other commissioner comments?
Mr. Chairman.
I just wanted to follow on that thought because the City of Los Angeles, that multiple property nomination was done, I think, 10 to 12 years ago. And I believe it's the first property after the initial set had gone to the National Register to be nominated under that. But also, it was somewhat of a limited geographic focus in that context at the time period. It was funded by the Community Redevelopment Agency that was in the Central Avenue area. But since that time, the nomination has been expanded as part of Survey LA to include the entire city.
I certainly want to second what the other commissioners and the SHPO have said about the Eddie Anderson House. And just to add a bit of information, it's in a neighborhood called Jefferson Park, which was an African-American community at a time when African-Americans were not allowed to live in certain other parts of the city. I'd also note that a number of Hollywood stars lived there, including Hattie McDaniel, who was the first African-American to receive an Academy Award in 1940 for her work in Gone with the Wind. Her house still stands in that general area as well. So it's definitely part of our cultural history. I also wanted to just note the Grace Lewis Miller House as well by Richard Neutra. Really glad to see that this is given this recognition. This house, and to really to commend the owner as well, this house was in extremely bad condition a number of years ago when the current owner bought it and did restore it, as you see it in these pictures. And so we constantly need to be aware that important houses are being lost for various reasons. We have lost other houses by Richard Neutra. The Maslin House, also out in the desert, was demolished several years ago, unexpectedly, but as a great loss. I'd also, just to end on that, note the passing of Richard Neutra's eldest son, Dion, who passed away at the end of last year. He was in his 90s and a fierce protector of his father's legacy. And so we have a lot of Richard Neutra's buildings around because of Dion Neutra's work over the years. He was also an architect, worked with his father on a number of notable projects as well. So his passing is something that should be noted. And one final note on Pioneer Town, which is such a delight. But it has such serious ramifications for California history in particular. It was a studio set, and the power of the movie industry in California's economy cannot be underestimated. And the fact that this is the last such site for filming outside the studio buildings themselves is something to be noted. The tourist economy, the movie economy, and just keeping alive in some way, the myth of the West that we have seen in novels and radio programs and movies and television shows over the years. It is, again, such a distinctive part of California's culture and architecture. So I'm glad to see this nomination accepted here.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, we have one speaker card for public comment, and that's Eddie Anderson.
First of all, I'd like to thank everybody, a part of this body. This was an amazing celebration, and I want to just extend my gratitude, really, and those of you who spoke up in honor of my father. I'm Eddie Rochester Anderson, Jr., but a lot of people ask me, are you going to follow your father's footsteps? That's literally impossible. I tried putting on his baby shoes, and they were too big for me. You get what I'm saying? Literally. I literally was this particular mission of making this historical. It's been in my agenda since I was 19 years old. So this is extremely huge for me. And I was just telling some of the friends that came here with me in this production that he is my father. But he's not. My father is everybody's father. And he paved the way for so many people of color, and that's including all colors, not just the brown skins, the whites, the everything. Him and Jack Benny were truly the first dynamic duel. We know about Batman and Robin, right? But they were the first dynamic duel. They actually were. They broke so many color lines, and he couldn't have done it without Jack Benny either. I was privileged enough to come across some pictures of Jack Benny and my father, and you can see. I mean, pictures project, and you could see what's going on. The imagery, they were always next to each other. So I think they had a hidden agenda. I really do. And the agenda is what we're seeing right now. And so they paved the road. They really did. And I want to thank everybody here for nominating and participating and speaking. This is just a beginning. It really is. The mansion has had many struggles. It's still in the family. My mother's still alive. She's 87 years old. This is going to be huge for her. It's going to be huge for everybody. And it started right here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of the State Historical Resources Commission, congratulations to you, your family, and your father. All right, we are now moving on to Consent Calendar 2. The Commission will now hear those nominations to the National Register of Historical Resources that are on Consent Calendar 2. Information concerning the nominations has been forwarded to each commissioner prior to the meeting and is on file at the Office of Historic Preservation. Before we proceed, I must recuse myself from hearing Consent Calendar 2. Are there any other commissioners that may need to recuse themselves? No. Do I need to ask if we need a poll? Yeah. So, hold on 1 second. Go back one. Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to pull the nomination? Is there any commissioner that wishes to pull the nomination? So I'm going to turn it over to the vice chair for the purposes of this next session, and somebody come and get me when you're done. Thanks.
We will pause to give the chair time to depart the room. Okay, Consent Calendar 2. Office of Historic Preservation staff will now present information about the single property on Consent Calendar 2.
as soon as the PowerPoint is posted.
I only have it's both the same PowerPoint for both. What slide?
Right where we left off. Descanso Gardens is a 149-acre botanical garden in a residential setting in La Cañada, Flint Ridge, approximately 15 miles north of the city of Los Angeles. 13 contributing resources include 7 buildings, 5 sites, and 1 structure. The Body House, garage, and associated landscaping known as the Body Complex, Body Lodge, Caretaker's Cottage, Body Drive Landscape, Descanso Creek Landscape, Camellia Forest, Japanese Garden, Tea House, Minka House, Japanese Garden Bridge, and Lakeside Lookout. Architectural styles include Colonial Revival, Hollywood Regency, an early 20th century style influenced by the movie industry, Asian, and mid-century modern. 17 non-contributing resources, including 4 buildings, 1 site, 10 structures, and 2 objects, have lost integrity, date from outside the periods of significance, or do not relate to the documented significance of the property. Despite intermittent development since purchased by Elias Manchester Body in 1937, Descanso Gardens retains historic integrity. Descanso Gardens is eligible for the National Register of Historic Places at the local level of significance under Criterion A in the area of agriculture for its association with Manchester Body's contributions to horticulture in Southern California, and in the area of ethnic heritage Asian, Japanese, for its association with the Japanese-American experience before and after World War II. The district is also eligible at the local level of significance under Criterion C in the areas of architecture and landscape architecture, as the work of master architects and landscape architects Smith & Williams, Eijiro Nunokawa, and Kenneth Masao Nishimoto. The 1937 to 1952 period of significance encompasses Manchester Body's ownership of the property. The Japanese garden was completed during the second period of significance, 1966 to 1969. The property is nominated by a consultant on behalf of the Descanso Gardens Guild, who manages the property in a public-private partnership with Los Angeles County, the majority owner. Letters of support are on file from the Los Angeles County Historical Landmarks and Records Commission, distributed this morning, and from the County of Los Angeles Department of Parks and Recreation. Southern California Edison, SCE, owns 9.9 acres within the district. In response to a letter of comment from SCE, the nomination was updated to include 3 SCE infrastructure facilities as non-contributing resources and clarify their impact on integrity of setting. An additional 1.2 acres in a riding and hiking easement recorded to the city of La Cañada Flint Ridge crosses through the northern portion of the district, west of the SCE portion. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine Descanso Gardens is eligible under National Register Criteria A and C at the local level of significance with 2 periods of significance, 1937 to 1952 and 1966 to 1969. Staff recommends the State Historic Preservation Officer approve the nomination for forwarding to the National Park Service for listing on the National Register. This concludes Consent Calendar 2.
Thank you. Thank you, Amy. I would entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve Consent Calendar 2.
We have a motion by Commissioner Brandes.
I second.
And a second from Commissioner Hansen. Would Tara please poll the commission?
Brandis.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hess.
Aye.
Hoyos.
Aye.
McKay.
Aye.
Villalowith.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye.
Motion carries 7-0-0.
Are there any commissioners who wish to speak on the property just approved on Consent Calendar 2?
I would, please. As an archaeologist, I typically don't comment on architecture, but I grew up part of my life in Pasadena, and my wife won't be listening to this, but when I was younger, for some reason, I dated a couple of people from La Cañada Flint Ridge area, so I spent a lot of time at Descanso Gardens, and I knew I was going to be an archaeologist back then, but I never thought I would be voting on something like this. And it's weird how life takes these turns and brings back these memories. But I will say, if you haven't been there, it's a very peaceful place. And that's why we would go there. It's for a little peace and quiet and just to walk around and enjoy the serenity. That's all I really have to say, a little personal life there. Thank you.
Any other commissioner comments? Staff comments? Okay. Any member? I don't have any speaker cards, but any member of the audience that would like to make a comment? Okay. I think we are done with Consent Calendar 2.
Twilight, and can you please go fetch Adam?
Yes. Thank we would you. Like Dad to come back. Welcome back, Dad. We all missed you.
Thank you.
The film crew was out there, and I was caught up in an impromptu interview. Yeah. Can I ask about the results?
It passed unanimously.
Great. Next on the agenda is the National Register of Historic Places and California Register of Historical Resources discussion and action items. There is a summary of everything that had been pushed, and I will refer you to the agenda for this meeting for those notes. Let's see. I think we go to public comment at this point. Now is the time where we accept comments from the public on items not on the agenda. The Commission welcomes brief comments from the public but cannot take any action on the non-agendized matters. I've got no public comment cards for non-agendized items, so we're going to move to Commission discussion and action items. So we will have a discussion on all three items. We'll open it up for public comment because we do have one card on those, and then we will vote. First is approval of the State Historical Resources Commission 2019 annual report.
You were all sent a draft of the annual report as part of the electronic binder that was sent to you. It follows our standard format that we've been using for a number of years now for your annual report, which is a requirement in the Public Resources Code that it be given to the legislature. I did want to mention one thing on the 2018 annual report. We had quite a bit of back and forth with the governor's office. All of your annual reports go to the governor's office for approval before they get distributed to the legislature. And so we made some additions to the 2018 annual report based upon the feedback that we got from the governor's office. There were ministerial additions to the section on program goals where the governor's office simply asked us to address some issues related to sort of how you
set and meet program goals. And your program goals have always been the same goals as the state plan since 2008. So they mirror the state plan goals. So I just wanted to mention that if you are amenable to this and include this in your motion, what we can do is just go back into the 2019 annual report and add that same information. It was not included because the back and forth that we had with the commission, Julie and I had, or with the governor's office, Julie and I had, we didn't convey that information to Amy, who was working on your 2019 annual report. So if you're okay with it, we will just add that same information to this report before it goes over to the governor's office for approval.
And I'll just say that the additions were meant to provide greater clarity to the efforts and the goals. So I think they did a good job in helping us with that.
Yeah, it was good questions that they asked. It was.
I just have a quick question. In terms of a process, it goes to us first and then to the governor's office, then to the legislature?
Yes. Okay. And actually, we have a very formal process that we follow. So it actually first goes to, from when you approve it, we finalize it, it goes to the director of state parks, then it goes to the Natural Resources Agency, then it goes to the governor's office.
So do I have a motion?
I move that we approve the 2019 annual report for the commission with the changes noted by the deputy chair.
A second.
Roll call vote, please.
Adams.
Aye.
Brandis.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hess.
Aye.
Hoyos.
Aye.
McKay.
Aye.
Vilanowith.
Aye.
Ciro.
Ciro. Aye.
Motion carries 900.
Yeah, we're going to do committees first and then Chris last. So committee discussion, not open for action. And the SHPA will provide an update on our committee discussion.
Yes. Thank you. So, for the public, yesterday, all eight commissioners were present at the workshop at the State Archives building. We also wanted to thank Tamara Martin and her staff for graciously hosting us for that workshop and an amazing tour of California State Archives. We have such a vast and deep, rich resource there for all of us to appreciate and use. So wanted to acknowledge the State Archives as well. We had a conversation yesterday really about the topics that you all had discussed at the last workshop. You've also had conversations in the workshop to August. And then at some point, you all also sent our office your suggestions for topics for both ad hoc committees and speakers or special workshops. So our next steps will be to collate all of those thoughts, send them back to you, ask you to help us rank priorities for each of you, send them back to us individually, and then we'll collate them and present them to you at the next meeting so that you can begin to sort of target scheduling either ad hoc committees or workshops or both in the months ahead. I will also say that we had a request from the commission at the next meeting for our registration unit staff to talk about how they process nominations. So that will be the topic for the next meeting, unless you all have a different opinion. Good?
And I'd like to add that if we do get some of these workshops on the agenda for the State Historical Resources Commission workshop, I encourage the public to attend as they learn more about some of the fields that the commissioners represent and how we are reviewing these nominations and how we become better reviewers to help the public get their interested properties on the National Register. Any other additions to our committee discussion from the commission?
I'll just say one thing that I was just thinking about is that we'll also send you the goals from the statewide plan so that you can look at those when you're thinking about priorities. That way we can be targeting to them and tracking to them and sort of collaborating a little bit more on making sure we're hitting those points.
Aligning with those goals is a great idea.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So we'll go back to Chris, which is the California Historical Resources Information System. There is action to be made. And I believe we have structured a motion based on a discussion, a long and informative discussion we had yesterday regarding Chris fees and Chris actions. So is there a motion by the commission?
So first, yes, we did have a long, this is not my motion yet.
Yeah. Public before we vote. That's right. I'm sorry. Thank you. Tara, keeping us honest. So do we want to have a discussion and then give them discussion and then vote? Can we do that?
Yes, as long as the public is heard before the motion.
Of course. Brian, do you have discussion on this before you present the motion?
Yeah, it'll be rephrased and not as a motion. But so, yes, we had a long, spirited discussion yesterday. It is my opinion, and we'll further make a motion at the right time, that we maintain the current fee structure and not change the fees as recommended in the staff report dated January 30th and 31st. But we do recognize the current practices that were reflected in previous changes, but are not necessarily outlined in the fee structure. We also discussed a lot about the digital conversion. And we will be making a request in the motion that we still receive digital conversion progress at each of the meetings. And then back with the fees, if I didn't say it, is to not request that the fees or maintain the fee structure for at least a year. So that would be reviewed at the next or the first meeting in 2021, at the first regularly scheduled meeting in 2021.
So. For public comment on Chris, we have one speaker card, Brian Munch.
Morning, Chair Shiro, Commissioners, Shippa Polanco, OHP staff. On behalf of the other ICs, I just want to thank you for the workshop yesterday, including Chris Coordinator Anne-Marie Meaden, who's not here today. I do truly appreciate the opportunity to discuss the status of the CRIS with you all as we collectively work, the CRIS being the ICs, the OHP, and the Commission here before us. We do all collectively agree that this work is incredibly important and valuable during the planning processes, and many resources would be perhaps lost if this good work wasn't finished. On the drive out here this morning from Santa Rosa, I was kind of recalling how far we've come in this. You know, I've stood before you in the past, kind of providing some updates at different points in time, and gosh, we're about at the point now, as the fog was covering up the ground, I was wondering what was below, and I was realizing that I could almost in this day and age ask an information center what archaeological resources are at that place in GIS today. Almost all of the inventories, paper maps from the 70s, 80s, 90s are all put away. We're getting really close to those archaeological resource locations being completed. Built environment has a lot of room to grow, and I look forward to coming back and providing more updates about that that digitization progress and getting those built environment resources fully incorporated into the primary numbering system in times to come. As we work to get all this information all sorted, I really just appreciate the conversations that we're having, the learning that we're both doing on both sides. If there's anything in the interim that you need through SHPO to staff, please just let us know. We really do want to provide the data in the most granular format we can. At times, the comparisons from IC to IC do present some of those, keeping things apples to apples. So we look forward to not providing all, none, or some in terms of updates. And perhaps if it does warrant it, breaking resources down to the type of classes of resources. I think sometimes things get lost in the shuffle. They're all important, but there's different means to complete the goal depending on the resource type. Confidentiality being what it is, some of the archaeological resources present some of the biggest challenge in terms of funding opportunities compared to the built environment where other public partnerships can be gained from these local governments. Now, just so you know, as much as I'd love to talk to you, I don't want to delay things, and my main reason for being up here is taking a wide format scanner over to the North Central Information Center so we can scan these old paper maps. These are one-of-the-kind documents. You were at the archives yesterday. From the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, again, we've been recording the location of the state's cultural resources on these maps. So now this scanner is traveling around from IC to IC. Eventually, it'll end up back in Sacramento at the OHP. So we can get this product scanned. Another thing off the list to check off for y'all. So thank you very much for your time. Again, I just really appreciate the dialogue. Thank you.
One more comment from Chippa Polanco.
It just occurred to me that for the public, we might want to just give a quick overview of where we are in this effort and what it is. So our CRIS is our information data centers, our data information in 9 centers throughout the state and our office at the Office of Historic Preservation. We are desperately trying to move as quickly as we can from a paper format to a fully digitized format. At the same time, with the help of our smart partners at State Parks IT, we're creating a single system so all that information can live in one format, and then we can hopefully also improve in our office by having an electronic submission system for consultations and other work that we do in the office. So that's the overall picture of what we're trying to accomplish. Our office, as well as the ICs, have a backlog of paper versus digitized documents. And with whatever savings we have at the end of the year in our budgets, we're putting it to scanning our office backlog as well, so we can all keep going. And I just wanted to say that the conversation about digitization and fees and all of those things are sometimes a little bit rough, but I want to acknowledge that the ICs have done an amazing amount of work in creating and keeping these records in a place where the public can access them, regardless of whether they're paper or digital, and we really appreciate the partnership.
Thank you. I'd like to add that as somebody who interned at an information center as an undergrad, and then another information center as a graduate student, and then somebody in the professional field of cultural resources management who relies on the data that the information centers maintain to ensure that important archaeological sites and important buildings and important built environment resources are not impacted as the state manages its infrastructure and develops and grows. It's incredibly important that this data be available at a quick and expedient way to those qualified to review it. I can't speak with authority on some of the architecture that a lot of my fellow commissioners can, but on this topic, I can tell you that this effort is paramount for how this state will evolve in the historic preservation space, specifically how to avoid important resources while also doing the work of private industry and public utilities and federal agencies and everybody who's doing something in the state. This data is vastly important, and access to it means that we can avoid impacting those things that represent our culture prehistorically and historically. So I thank everybody who participates in the debate, and I know that there are opinions that differ, and that's why we talk about it, so that we can come up with the most mutually agreeable approach forward. And I think we're there, and we're closer than we ever have to something that works better than what it was yesterday. So, thanks. With that said, do we have a motion?
First of all, I agree. We've been working on this a long time, and there's been a lot of great progress. But with that, I'd like to recommend a three-part motion. First, as I stated, is to no change in the fees, to maintain the current fee structure through the first quarter of 2021, so for a review of our first quarterly meeting in 2021. Also is to accept the current practices as outlined in the OHP staff report dated January 30th and 31st, 2020. And then lastly is to request a quarterly update at each one of our meetings on the digital conversion progress.
It's a lot, so I'm just waiting for council to capture it. Well, do we have a second?
Second.
Roll call.
Adams.
Aye.
Brandis.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hess.
Aye.
Hoyos.
Aye.
McKay.
Aye.
Vanellaweth.
Aye.
Schriro.
Aye.
Motion carries 9-0-0. I apologize. It is 800. And if I said 900 earlier, I meant 800, except for the one where Commissioner Zero recused himself.
Commissioner Schriro made it 70.
Yes, correct.
flows off the tongue. All right. Thank you.
Zero.
We'll move to commissioner comments. Are there any commissioners that would like to make any comments in general? Yes.
I just have two comments. One is on the annual report. As I was reading through that, I was looking at the buildings that we approved the nominations on last year, and I kind of categorized them in different ways. What kinds of buildings, what part of the state, et cetera. And I might invite my fellow commissioners to kind of look at it that way. It's kind of interesting. We get, we deal with what is sent to us. We do not go out to search or to solicit different types of buildings or whatever. But that said, it's kind of interesting to look at the categories that these buildings fall into and see one measure of how we're doing, basically. There were certainly a number of modern buildings nominated last year, which is a particular interest of mine, but vernacular buildings, also a large category of buildings from different ethnic communities and history, which was really encouraging. Projects which had to do with interesting master plans or neighborhoods, infrastructure and engineering, archaeological, and then unique buildings like the Encinitas Boathouse that we approved as well. And then a number of ongoing themes, big Beaux-Arts office buildings in downtown areas still have a great appeal. And then also buildings of the Old West or agriculture, the agricultural history of California. But I think this is one measure of what we're doing. The second thing I wanted to talk about, it relates to the Chris conversation we had, is how dependent we are on researchers, historians, and the people who gather and make that information accessible. And several of the nominations that we approved today had just a remarkable level of scholarship and depth and incredible information, which I would love to see us be able to get out into the community more in the future. But then on that note, I also would like personally to note the passing of two figures, two historians who I think have done a great deal of work. One down in Orange County where I live, Phil Brigandi is a historian who just dedicated his life to incredible research, especially into Orange County in such depth. He is the person who, among other things, taught me the pronunciation of Portola. Portola is what I have said all of my life. Portola Valley, Portola Elementary School, Portola whatever. But he tells me that it was Portola. And so I will remember that. And you other historians, and if you know more, we can have that discussion. But, for example, Phil Brigandi last year, 2019 was the 250th anniversary of Portola's exploration through Southern California. And he actually went out and found the sites where they camped in Orange County and brought people there to so that they could appreciate that history, bringing history alive. The other historian who passed at the end of last year was Sally Woodbridge in the San Francisco Bay Area. Friend wrote me that the San Francisco Chronicle declined to write an obituary about her, which I found sad. She was the author of a number of really important books, including the Northern California Guide to Architecture, which started its first vision version back in the 1960s and was updated over the years as well. She was a scholar on John Galen Howard as well. And then a great book, Bay Area Houses, which she edited, which was one of the early books, and this goes back, I believe, to the 1980s, into California and the Bay Area's modern architectural history. And she did it at a time when some of those architects were still alive. So, you know, she had firsthand, she and her co-authors had firsthand interviews with those people. But we really do, this commission, I think, depends upon these, the research of all of these people in all of these fields. And I would just like to recognize Phil Burgundy and Sally Woodbridge in particular today for their contributions. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hess. Any other comments from commission? All right, with that, meeting adjourned.